Weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Thanks to Lottie and David. It is Friday the 14th of June and this is Game On. Well, coming up today, Euros fever has taken over the studio. Alan Cawley is with me and Fergal Brennan will also join us. They're going to share their views on what the tournament will hold. Brendan Devaney is going to look ahead to the weekend's football action and Shane McGrath has the hurling covered. Plus, Bernard Jackman will give us his views on the URC semi-finals. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552. We're on X at Game On 2FM. Or you can WhatsApp us on 087 187 9200. And please do let us know how you think the Euros are going to go.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome along. We're a very excited studio this evening. The Euros is kicking off tonight, Germany against Scotland at 8 o'clock and all the games are on RTE television, so do tune in and we'll be previewing, reviewing them all through the tournament as well. So stay tuned all the time to Game On. Alan Cawley is with me. Alan, how are you?
I'm good, Marie. I'm just as excited as you. Major tournaments, you can't beat them. And obviously we're getting on in years now, Marie.
Speak for yourself, Alan Cawley.
Well, we're the same age, aren't we? We go back a long way. But the I do feel it's always part of our childhood growing up. And even though as we get older, it never leaves you. I still have the same feeling today about the major tournament as I do when I was a kid. And whether it's the Euros or the World Cup, it's absolutely amazing. The only sad, I suppose, thing about it all nowadays is that we were fortunate and lucky enough to obviously experience some of Ireland qualification. But when you look at it now, I'm on the wrong mic, am I?
Sorry.
You're on now.
I'm so looking forward to it, Maria. I really am, because as I said there about just our childhood growing up, the major tournaments almost feel as though it was part of our childhood, and the older you get, I don't think that ever leaves you. And I have the same excitement today about the Euros starting, the same with the World Cup, all those, and it's just a pity we're not there. And that's for another day, that argument, because I think it'll go on for quite a while, and it will be quite a while maybe until we do get there. But we were fortunate enough to experience maybe some of the scenes of what Scotland are experiencing at the moment, because they're
it's
like
wild.
The Irish.
It is amazing. Yeah. The fan zones, the amount of them that are over there now. I know they're in the opening game tonight, so they're at fever pitch, but it really is class, Al, just watching them.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I say, they're the memories that they'll have forever. You see them at the moment, all the videos going viral around social media, bagpipes everywhere. I seen a fella actually...
and kilts.
Seen a fella falling over last night. I hope he's okay today. But that's the beauty of it as well. You're there as a supporter, but there to enjoy it. And the one thing with the Scottish fans as well, like the Irish, they do enjoy it and bring plenty of colour and sound and noise to the place. And it'll be some experience tonight, obviously facing off against the host nation as well. Really looking forward to the game.
Yeah, Fergal Brennan is with us as well. Fergal, I love the fact that it's in Germany, that it's in one place, that we're not trying to figure out where all these games are on. We know exactly where everyone is and what they're doing and what the culture is and just everything that's happening around and the atmosphere and the beer and the sausages and everything.
It is indeed. And obviously Germany has got such a rich football culture as well that you would associate with the club teams, with the national teams, and everyone's seen the kind of association with fan culture that's so easy to just slip into and enjoy yourself, go, kind of whatever happens for a Scotland situation. You're kind of hoping to break that record of never qualifying for the knockouts, but you know that they're in with a chance. Obviously, it's going to be difficult for them tonight. And everyone does have the memories of these tournaments. Obviously, Alan was mentioning there. I was thinking back to Euro 2016 and the Ireland-Belgium game, and it was the hottest day I've ever had in my life. And we were in a fan park watching it. And just, I remember being so, so dehydrated from not drinking enough water, shall we say. those are the kind of memories that, as bad as some bits of them are, that they're also brilliant. And it is obviously frustrating that Ireland are not there. Everyone's kind of maybe picking a second team to back, and Scotland are a nice one to get behind. And I think they will make an impact. The situation now where a third place finish might get them through and might get others through is something to cling on to. If they lose tonight, it's not the be-all and end-all. In the past, that would have been the situation, the old cliche of don't lose your first game. If they do lose tonight, there's still plenty of opportunity to get points off Hungary and Switzerland. And I'm really, really looking forward to it. And I think it'll be a cracking game tonight.
So what's the mood like over in England then, Fergal? Is there excitement? Do they believe football's coming home? Or have they tempered their expectation a bit after looking at the back four that they might be putting out?
It depends wildly on who you speak to. I think that there is obviously a huge amount of expectation. And I think in comparison to the past, a lot of fans who'd be a bit more reasonable and less likely to get kind of swept away with the it's coming home kind of nonsense are legitimately looking at it and seeing the form of players like Bellingham and Phil Foden, Harry Kane, and thinking it doesn't have to be all kind of songs and optimism that is really backed up by anything. There's genuine quality there. My issue with them is, as you say, the issues in defence. No Harry Maguire. Luke Shaw is an injury doubt. And I just think that possibly will be their undoing. In terms of the midfield, I think there's still a bit of a question mark over who's going to play alongside Rice and Bellingham. I don't think there'll be an issue getting out of the group, but we've all been looking at wall charts and predictors over the last couple of weeks, and my kind of way of plotting the path is probably France in the semis for them. And they were so good against England in the World Cup, and France, for me, are probably even a touch stronger than they were then. Obviously, Mbappe's buoyed by this move to Real Madrid. He'll be looking to really set things on fire. So I think there is more realistic optimism about England than in previous tournaments, and there'll be a bit of justification to that. But I still think when it really comes to it against the very, very best, they're probably a bit short.
Al? Yeah, I suppose looking at it a few weeks back, I was really, really excited about England and I'm very optimistic, but I felt I was nearly being carried away by everyone else as well, Marie. And when I actually sat down and went through the squad and just listened to different debates and discussions around it and looked a little bit more in depth, I'd have a lot of concerns now about it. Not a lot, to be fair. I think defensively, like everybody else, we can all see the concerns there. The issue I would have is that, and I've had this problem for a long time when we go back to the debate with Scholes, Gerrard, Lampard and all, I just think they're going to be trying to shoehorn players into positions that they're not accustomed to and suited to. And I always feel that if it comes down to a decision between two very good players, like, I just think pick the best player rather than playing someone in a position where that you're trying to fit somebody in where they're not comfortable with, hence Scholes over the years. If it came down to making a decision between him or either Lampard and Gerrard, make the decision and make the big call. And I just think with Bellingham at the moment, he'd be one I'd be concerned about, not just with where they're going to play him, because I think they may end up trying to play him maybe as a number 10, which will kind of end up Foden going out to the left, which I don't want to see. I'd love to see Foden in the centre. Or will they play Bellingham alongside Rice? But then he's so conservative, Southgate, that he'd want maybe a defensive-minded one in there. But then he's talking about Trent Alexander-Arnold. So you might as well play Bellingham in there if that's the case, because he won't defend Trent. So it'll probably be horses for courses as well, depending on the opposition. But I would just be slightly concerned as well in terms of the weight of expectation that may be on Bellingham. And having watched him in that Champions League final as well, Marie, he looked like a lad who has had such a long season, not only physically but mentally as well, the drain on playing for Real Madrid with the hype and all that he's gone through and the plaudits and all the exposure that he's had this year, which has been brilliant for him. But he just looked like a lad who he's obviously got his little break, but I don't think a 2-week break at the end of the season will be enough. And coming into this, the expectation that's on him and the likes of Kane maybe and Foden, I just think might be too big. And then you have your defensive issues as well, and I think they may just come up short.
Yeah, I'm with you on the Bellingham thing. Like, he's only 20.
That's like, it, like, you know.
He's so young.
Yeah, and it's not the physical, because in fairness, when he runs around it, you know, he's a fit lad. You can all see that in his, obviously, his physique as well. But I just think the mental drain of playing for Real Madrid and the season that he's had, and then the hype as well, the heights that he's hit, Marie, it's very hard to maintain that.
I think everyone's going to be really interested as well in just that starting 11. And then once he picks, Gareth Southgate picks his starting 11, then it's the performance after that. But who he actually goes with will be fascinating and will probably tell a lot on whether he will stick with the conservative approach that he usually does. Let's move on from England, though. Like, some really, really tough groups, but tonight's game and seeing Germany and how they're going to perform as well is quite intriguing, Fergal, because we know that they've had, they're the host nation, there's a huge amount of pressure, but their club football's going really well. They haven't been maybe as fluid and cohesive as German teams in the past, but it does feel like things are starting to come together a little bit more for them. What do you reckon?
I agree. They're my tip to win it. I was kind of going for France for a while, and then in the last week or so, I've convinced myself on Germany. I think, obviously, the home nation aspect is huge, but I look at the team, the squad, the kind of way that Julian Nagelsmann is trying to put things together, and I think they've got the right skill set in so many different areas of the pitch. They've got a very reliable goalkeeper. They've got Antonio Rüdiger at the back, who's a real leader. He's a winner. He's arguably the best man marker in European football. Toni Kroos is back, huge experience and quality in midfield. They've got Andrić, who's been really good for Leverkusen this season, who can be the legs in and around him and Ilkay Gundogan. Then they've got Jamal Musiala, who's got that X factor, quick, can take people on. Thomas Muller, very clever player, lots and lots of experience. And Niklas Füllkrug, who I know he had that chance in the Champions League final where he hit the post, but he's proven this season with Dortmund on the way to the final that he can score really, really important goals. And normally in major tournaments, the main striker in the best team isn't the big superstar name. It's the players dotted around them. They just need a guy to stick in maybe 4 or 5 goals in the tournament, and the rest of the quality will just drive them along. And that's for me the picture for Germany. When you look at England or Italy or France, I think there's more question marks over them than Germany. France would be the closest. I still think defence is a tiny bit of an issue for them. There's a decision to be made over Upamecano, Saliba and Konate, who starts at centre-back. But I think Germany are a bit more together. We know what Nagelsmann's going to do. Their group shouldn't be a major issue. They should get through, and they should go through as first, and then plotting that path to the final. They look in a strong position for me. I really, really do fancy them.
That's an interesting take. Few people have said Germany, and then when you Fergal spells it out there, I can see why people would be backing them.
Yeah, and you look at their record in the Euros as well. They've won it 3 times, like Spain. They've won the most matches, 27 over their history as well, when you tally up the matches all together over the competitions as well. They've got to the semi-final 3 times out of the last 4 as well, Marie. So they've obviously unbelievable pedigree and history when it comes to these major tournaments, as we know with Germany. And they're always thereabouts. You can never write them off. I think the fact that Nagelsmann has come in is massive for them. Seems as though he's brought back a little bit of stability. They're unbeaten their last 4 matches. They've won 3 and drawn one as well, Marie. And as Fergal outlined, some of the individuals that they have are obviously of a very high quality. It'll be interesting for me in that midfield area what he does, because there's another one I would add in that Fergal didn't mention, is Florian Wirtz. And he's had an unbelievable season with Bayer Leverkusen, similar to Musiala in the sense that obviously he's that creative spark. And it'll be interesting to see what he does with Toni Kroos and Gundogan. I watched Gundogan earlier on in the season, obviously been a great player, but he looked to me like his legs were gone in one of the games I seen against Barcelona. He really struggled. Toni Kroos is obviously coming to the tail end of his career as well. So it'll be interesting to see what he does in that midfield area. Will he go with maybe just Kroos and the 2 younger ones around him? Pavlovic of Bayern Munich might have been one to go in alongside him as well, but he's missing, I think, the first game. So it'll be interesting what he does there. As Fergal said about the centre forwards, Havertz coming off a great season with Arsenal, he could play up alongside Füllkrug or through the middle with him. Fulkrug's been brilliant himself. So they do have a lot of strength, and they're the home nation as well, with the home crowd behind them. And sometimes that can weigh on your shoulders. I think the German fans will actually get behind this team and really kind of drag them on.
I'm so excited about it now. I'm really going to walk out the studio, go home, put it on. We've a bit more to get through yet, but yeah, look, it's set up to be brilliant. And I think seeing the Scotland fans and the atmosphere, and then the German team, like, it's going to be a brilliant game. Do Scotland have any hope of getting out of that group, Fergal? I know that there's a chance if you finish third that you will get that round of 16 game. How do you think they're going to do?
I do think they'll get through, and I think they'll get through on that third place ticket, because Switzerland are very experienced tournament operators. They do generally, the majority of times, get through to at least the last 16, and they've got a lot of experience in the squad. But Hungary, in my opinion, there's been a lot of noise around them. Obviously, the friendly game against Ireland the other night, I don't think they were great, personally. I know, obviously, the result was a bit of a strange one in the end, but I just look at their important players. Dominik Szoboszlai has not been fantastic for Liverpool this season. I think he's been kind of in and out in terms of form and injuries as well. They're lacking in a lot of areas, and I think Scotland will be pumped up for this. They know that there's a little bit of history to be achieved if they can just get into the knockouts and just get rid of that record that they're sick of hanging over them for so long. I think Switzerland will probably get second, and I think Scotland will get third, and then it's just a lottery, because it's 4 points is a pretty much a guarantee that you'll get through. 3, you'd need a good goal difference and a bit of luck on your side, but I think they will. Goals will be an issue for them. It's either going to be Shea Adams or Lauren Shankland up top, and it's obviously concerns about them being able to score goals at this level. But I think they've got more quality than Hungary, personally, individually. Robertson, McGinn, McTominay. And I just think that energy that the fans will bring, travelling in their thousands, will drive them on. I just hope that if they do lose tonight, they don't let their heads drop, get focused on the next game, and make sure that they can still pick up some points.
Yeah, those games are going to come thick and fast as well. So you're going for Germany to win the whole tournament. Fergal, Al, still
Portugal
still haven't wavered.
No, I'll not waver. When I make the prediction, that's it. I'll not waver.
Let's talk about Arsenal then.
Well, you can't be changing. You can't change. So if it works out, great. If it doesn't, you can't change, Marie.
I'm the opposite. I went for France last week and I moved to Portugal now.
But that's fine if you change before the tournament. Okay, but once you make it before the tournament. So, no, I just think Portugal are so strong as well. The group that they're in, they should come through that handy enough, you would think. Turkey will probably be a difficult game, but Georgia and Czech Republic should come through. Scoring goals, we obviously watched them during the week. I wouldn't be judging them on the game during the week. But just the strength and depth that they have, it's absolutely unbelievable. The quality of players, backup positions as well. Players that, household names, not even getting a look in. So it'll be so interesting to see how they go. The only worry I have for them, and I've always maintained this stance on Martinez. I just don't trust Martinez. I just don't think he's at that elite level of what some of the other managers are. And that will be my little worry, how he manages the whole situation. The Ronaldo thing will rear its head at some point. I know he looked magnificent during the week and very sharp. I think he'll probably start, but if he's to maybe, I don't know, go through a couple of games of not scoring and struggle and you take him off, or will he have the stroppy head on him? It'll be interesting to see how to just manage that. But certainly in terms of the talent at his disposal, he had talent at his disposal with Belgium and never got over the line. So that would be my question mark over them. But certainly in terms of the individuals that they have, Marie, it's frightening.
Okay, Fergal, you're going to be with us throughout the tournament, so we'll be talking to you as the games go on. But just a word on Seamus Coleman and his new deal at Everton. He is going to be there for another season, and I think everybody is delighted for him, Fergal.
Yeah, I was speaking to the Everton media officer today when the news got announced. There wasn't a major press conference or anything surrounding it, but he's vital to Everton. Sean Dyche wanted to keep him. He wanted to stay. Obviously, he has the Premier League record now, and it's a deal that suits all parties because the experience and the leadership that he brings, it really, really can't be understated how valuable he is to have around for Everton, for Ireland, and he fully deserves it. He's kept himself fit. He's come back from two really bad injuries and still manages to be a Premier League level player, and I'm looking forward to seeing another season out of him, and I wouldn't put it beyond the realms that he signs another one next summer, just depending on how he goes in the next 12 months.
Some player I'll...
Everyone loves Seamus. Yeah. He's been phenomenal. Like when I played against Seamus when he was only starting off, and I remember even lads in Sligo and telling me about this young lad that had just signed. So raw, but fantastic attitude. And they never, if someone had to say back then when they signed him for Sligo Rovers that he'd go on to have the career that he had, nobody would have believed it really. But it just goes to show what hard work, dedication, application, all those traits that you need to really, I suppose, it's not just talent, Marie. You need all those traits to go with it. And he has them in abundance. And look at the longevity that he's had at such a brilliant club like Everton. Loved in Liverpool, as Fergal knows. And loved in Ireland as well because he's such a great lad. And to see him playing on, hopefully he can maintain it. Even for us, he didn't look out of place in the couple of games as well. And he'll want to go as long as he can. Seamus looks after himself very well, so Seamus, everyone loves Seamus.
Fergal, thank you so much. We'll be talking to you over the next few weeks. Alan, just a word on the League of Ireland. Gavin Molloy has signed for Aberdeen, a huge blow for Damien Duffinshells.
Yeah, and funny, we're just coming off the back of mentioning Seamus Coleman. This could be a lad who I could think could go on and do something like... Now, that's a massive statement to make. but he has all those attributes, Marie. I love Gav Molloy. I think he's been the best young player in the league over the last probably 18 months, 2 years. He's been outstanding. Plays in a couple of different positions. But this year, he's been nailed down at centre-half by Damien Duff alongside Paddy Bard. And they've struck up such a brilliant partnership. On top of the plaudits that Shelburne are getting for being top of the league and Jarvis scoring the goals, it's their defensive quality that has kept them at the top of the league as well. They've the best defensive record in the league. They've only conceded 13 goals and he's been a mainstay, Molloy. He's absolutely brilliant. I thought somebody would have taken him at the end of last season. I was surprised that he stayed and Shells were managed to hold on to him, but I'm not surprised to see that he's going now and Aberdeen have got themselves a really, really good player.
Yeah, I think the...
But a huge blow, you're right, yeah. Really, a huge blow for Shells. It'll be interesting to see what they do. I think Damien Duff probably knew anyway, even if Molloy was staying, that he needs to strengthen because I just don't think they have the squad depth to carry them through, to have Europe coming up as well and if they want to stay at the top of the league. So I'd say he was probably going to look to bring in two or three anyway. He will definitely be forced into bringing in a centre-half, you would think. Now, Cameron Ledwidge is there that can play centre-half, but I still think he might go into the market and try and get one.
Yeah, the break is probably coming at a good time for them. They're top of the league, as you said, won again last night. Shamrock Rovers didn't win, though. Lost to St. Pat's, a late goal there. Loads of drama.
Yeah, Shamrock Rovers are really struggling this year, Marie. And you listen to some of Stephen Bradley's comments as well. And I don't know if it's just gone, if it's all gone a bit stale up there, to be fair. Like, if they've had such brilliant success and you're just looking at them at the moment. And I mentioned this last week about the likes of Limerick and Dublin and all these teams that go on 4, 5, 6 year runs of trying to maintain that is very, very difficult. And I'm just sensing a little bit of that from Shamrock Rovers at the moment. Like, you look at the league table, they've played 21 matches, Marie. So they've only 31 points, less than half of what's available. So that's a really poor return from their point of view, especially when you think of the resources that they have as well. And Shelburne now have opened up an 11-point gap. Is it 12 points? Now, Shamrock Rovers do have a game in hand on them, but 12 points is a massive lead. It really is, especially when you consider how resolute Shelburne are, and they don't concede many goals, they don't lose many games. So, like, that's going to take a big swing for Shamrock Rovers to maybe win 6, 7, 8 on the bounce, and Shelburne maybe lose 3 or 4. I can't see that happening now, especially the form that Shamrock Rovers are in. And the goalkeeping situation, it almost is like deja vu, bringing me back all those years ago when I was critical of the goalkeepers. But their goalkeepers this year has really cost them, and that's been an issue.
Derry City, late winner as well against Bowes.
Yeah, I was in Daly Mount, and it's what they deserve. Derry wasn't the best game in the world. Bohemians were very poor. I was disappointed with Bohemians, but especially they scored. They actually started the game quite well, scored an early goal. Derry scored within 30 seconds, worst time possible, obviously, after scoring to concede so soon. And Derry took over then in the second half, had 3 or 4 good chances. Left it late now. It was a 94th minute winner, Marie, but massive result for Derry. And that's obviously, they've opened up a gap now at the top. You look at Shelburne on 43 points, Derry on 41, and then you're down to Shamrock Rovers, 10 points off them as well. So at the moment, it's looking like a 2-horse race.
Remind me again, who did you predict to win the league?
Shamrock Rovers.
All right, you're sticking
and
with
I
that.
Won't waver. You can't waver, Marie.
Okay.
I got it wrong, it looks like.
Right, we're going to take a very quick break. Do stay with us, though. We'll be checking in with Gary Moran at the US Open. We also have our hurling preview, Gaelic football, and the URC semi-finals as well. 2FM.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. It is second round action day in the US Open in North Carolina. We're going to go straight to Gary Moran to check in on how things are going. Gary.
Yes, Marie. Well, things haven't gone brilliantly for Rory McIlroy, I'm afraid. I mean, not disastrously, but not brilliantly. He has finished the day, and I'll just say, first of all, that the leader is Thomas Dietry, the Belgian, who was a candidate for Luke Donald's Ryder Cup team last autumn in Rome and didn't quite make it. But he is 5 under for his round through 14 holes, 6 under for the tournament. So he leads on his own with Patrick Cantlay, who's 5 under overnight. He's about to go as well, obviously. He was among the afternoon wave of starters. McIlroy, for his part, well, he finished 2 over for the day, 3 under for the tournament. So right now he's 3 off the lead. He had a couple of bogeys starting on the 10th, a couple of bogeys, and looked like he might make another one on the 17th. He de-greened a par putt, ran down off the front of the green, which is not totally unusual here, but brilliantly chipped back in. And a little more steady after that, but just not as tight as he was yesterday. And then he bogeyed the last hole, which was a par 3 for him, the 9th. His ball plugged in a bunker and didn't get it up and down. So he's 3 off the lead at the moment. So it's Thomas Dietry on 6 under with 4 to play. Patrick Cantlay just making his way out onto the course. He's 5 under. And just 1 ahead then of Bryson DeChambeau, who had lots of birdies. I think 5 birdies and 4 bogeys in his 169. He's 4 under. Ludvig Åberg just gone out very shortly, also 4 under. Then McIlroy on 3 under. And of the Irish, well, Shane Lowry is level for the day. That's 4 over for the tournament. He's just got 2 to go. 4 over, could make the cut. It's top 60 in ties. Early drop shots, though, for Seamus Power. He's 2 over for the round, 3 over for the tournament after 2 holes, and an early drop shot from Tom McKibben as well, 5 over for the tournament. And Scotty Scheffler finished 5 over. Not a single birdie for Scheffler, who's been so dominant all season. On 5 over, he's likely to miss the cut. It's McIlroy finished on 3 under and currently 3 shots behind Thomas Dietry.
Thanks, Gary. We've been talking about predictions all programme so far. Who's your prediction for the US Open?
My prediction for the US Open.
Putting you on the spot now.
Oh, you're putting me on the spot, and I got to go in a sec. But my prediction for the US Open.
Well, we'll be coming back to you in a while.
I'm gonna stay with Rory. Okay.
Okay. Good. Right. We'll talk to you soon.
Bryson is his closest contender.
Bryson's my tip. I watched a lot of it earlier, and Not Rory for me, Gary.
Gary, we'll talk to you soon. Thanks so much.
Okay, cheers. Bye,
thanks.
Bye-bye.
We're going to turn our attention now to Gaelic football. And I'm delighted to say that Brendan Devaney is with us now. How are you, Brendan?
Marie, I am the very best. I, yourself and the good Al Larry. Al's an expert in all sports.
Everything.
You know,
yeah.
Well, Brendan, you know, there's not many of us out there.
I DM'd him for a wee accume there one week. I don't think he came back to me. It's probably that level of fame, Marie, where he brushes people like me.
No, Brendan, no.
You need
never
to get
like
onto
it.
The WhatsApp group that
I
he's
tell
on
you
with
what,
John Milan.
Portugal, Portugal, Brendan, for the Euros. There you go.
Good lad. Good. I like him. I'm with you in that one.
Will you watch the Euros?
Oh yeah, listen.
Be
would you believe I actually played in the same league as Al? That's probably one of my claims to fame. I have a wee bit of a wee bit of ground football as a JP. I played in the Irish League and the League of Ireland, and where I lived, Marie, growing up, it was soccer, and I hate actually calling it soccer as well, by the way. So that's how much, you know, I'm a football GA man. That when I grew up, yeah, it was pretty much 50-50 everywhere, you know. But obviously, the GA took over eventually, as it does.
Yeah, it always does.
Once them GA fellas get the claws into you, right?
Hey, Dal, the contract was bigger the other day.
Right, let's get back to the Gaelic football. It is the final round of the All-Ireland group phase. There's loads of games. We may as well just go group by group, Brendan. It's probably the simplest way to go through it. So in Group 1, it's Armagh, Galway, Westmeath and Derry. Armagh need to win or top the group. We'll finish second if they lose this weekend. Galway need to win to top the group. Any result will see them finish second. Westmeath, win or draw to advance in third. Defeat will eliminate them. Derry need to win to advance in third. Any other result will eliminate them. So we have Derry, Westmeath, Galway, Armagh. How do you see these two games going?
Yeah, listen, I suppose what Derry team's going to turn up against Westmeath is fascinating to see the rise and fall. And listen, they're our new neighbours. It gives me no pleasure to say that, Marie, because, you know, they did light up the early part of the year and we were like, what's coming next? It looks like they were ticking all the boxes and it's been an absolute free fall. I was at the game against Armagh. Listen, Marie, no word of a lie, Armagh could have scored 8 goals. The Derry defence was actually non-existent. Players not getting back in. They were completely out of shape. And if they do that against Westmeath, you know, there's no reason why they can't beat them. I mean, Westmeath have competed well in the two previous games. They'll make it, they'll slow the game down and play it in their style. I think if they actually went after Derry, they actually could go and beat them. So it remains to be seen how brittle they are. It looks like maybe it's almost a write-off season for Derry. So this could be a big scalp for Westmeath in that game, you know. And then, of course, you know, who's gonna top the group? Armagh always fascinating. I mean, Armagh beat them for the first time last year. And Armagh, Galway at that stage was looking like a team, can they get back into that All-Ireland status? They've come through a tough league. They're now going well in the Championship. They haven't conceded a goal in the Championship, and Armagh have really started racking up the goals. They're looking dangerous inside, and I think the last day out, you know, the midfield of Grimley and Creeley, you know, were an awesome pairing. Rian O'Neill was allowed to play a free role. And then they've brilliant forwards all round. I know Mernon was out injured. I think he might be gone for the season. Mackin as well. But Armagh have a big squad. And the main thing, unlike Derry, was the energy they brought to it. Now, obviously, Galway, a few injuries as well. You know, no more than Sean Kelly, Comer, you know, Finnerty. Are they all going to be out? It's looking like maybe they are. No, the big plus is Killian McDade was back. They played him at full forward. The last day, you know, not the normal position for him, but obviously missing Comer, they wanted the platform inside. I just fancy what I've seen of Armagh the last day. With those injuries that Galway had, I think Armagh might range it and top the group. And what a turnaround season could be for them.
You mentioned a turnaround in seasons, Brendan. What about the capitulation with Derry? At the start of the Championship, people had them down to win the All-Ireland.
Hey, soap opera stuff up here. I mean, the WhatsApps, the stuff was going about now, Rouse in Portugal, and this player's not happy, and that player's, listen, I suppose in their defence, you look at it, you know, last week around, you know, McGrugan's obviously out, McInnes was out, no, their half back line, just, you know, that McAvoy as well. No, you, that was one of the main drivers of the team. There's a lot of good players in that position. When you miss a lot of players, yeah, that said, you know, if you look at, you know, the midfield of Glass and Rodgers, you know, just not playing anything like they were in the spring, and then McGuigan up front, you know, they had other re-injuries. That Murphy fella looked like he was going to be a handful inside. They looked like then they had a lot of players coming at the right time. Everything's just falling apart. And the big thing is, and we've seen it, you know, we'll look at other managers going into this, how they timed their run. They were poor enough at the start of the league, and now they're picking up momentum. That's the way your season's supposed to be. And I think, obviously, Hart was just human. All the furore of him coming in from his own side and from wanting to get Derry on side, they went at the league too hard, and now they're paying the price.
Let's move on to Group 2, Brendan. It's more or less the same scenario as Group 1. Mayo and Dublin are going to battle it out for top spot. Roscommon and Cavan then are going to fight to stay alive. How do you see this group finishing?
Yeah, listen, this was the game we used to all look forward to. Was can Mayo put it up to Dublin for years? And I think now it's only going one way in terms of that meeting. This is the first time since 1905. All the times that these teams have played, it hasn't been at Croke Park. If this was a few years back, particularly at the Hyde, where they've won twice in this last 6 or 7 weeks, you'd think, God, this could be advantage Mayo. As it is, Marie, you're on about just closing the gap a wee bit. I mean, what do Dublin have to do, really, to shut down Mayo's scoring power? And really, a lot of that's based on O'Donoghue. So if they take one man out of it, already they've nullified a huge side of it. Whereas what do Mayo do at the other side? You know, and for years, Mayo played their own style, but they had unbelievable man-to-man defenders. You know, like I said, absolute heroes of the game. You know, Colin Boyles, Keegan's, Higgins' lads, I guess. So they could go man-to-man with Dublin and then put their running game on them. They never had the forward line, but they compensated because of that huge ability. Now those players aren't inside. They're now trying to, I suppose, re-identify themselves. It's possession football. A lot of Mayo people are a bit disenchanted by that, if you like. They're no longer maybe going for teams that they did in the past. So I think they're in this in-between phase. You know, if you look at it, obviously Paddy Durkin injury, Jim O'Connor out. I know McGreen went off the last day, the fullback. I think that's just a precaution. Listen, on the Dublin side, there's word that Niall Scully maybe he broke a foot, but, you know, broke a bone in his foot. There's nothing to stop this Dublin machine. And again, looking at the league, Dublin come back late on a holiday, lose opening two. They've been on a rampage after. You know, they've hammered other teams that are supposed to be close to them in the league. They've come through the championship now. No one's laid a glove on them so far. I think they want the challenge of going down there and test themselves against Mayo. I think they'll want Mayo to take the game to them. You know, how do Mayo cope? You know, you look at maybe Cohen dropping in, O'Hara sweeping, and then breaking with the likes of Ruan, trying to get the best, I suppose, of Conroy and O'Donoghue. If Mayo have the game of their lives, they might keep it within, you know, 4 or 5 points. But if Dublin open up and start to hit particularly three-pointers, you would really fear for Mayo from what we've seen so far.
And then the other one, Roscommon, Cavan.
Roscommon, Kevin, yeah, well, of those two teams, mate, you would think Roscommon probably deserve to come in the third spot. They've certainly acquitted themselves better against Dublin and against Mayo than Cavan had. You know, things is really tough for Cavan there, and obviously, you know, you're on about the loss of Paddy Lynch, just irreplaceable, the team they get. I know there's a worry about Enda Smith coming into this game. You know, Ben O'Carroll is out as well, but I think just how Roscommon coped with the other two sides, they gave them a bit of a game, certainly definitely with Mayo and for Dublin for long periods. And you know, I just think it's scoring power, they have it over Roscommon. I think they'll edge it.
Okay, Group 3 is a little bit more complicated now than the first two groups. So there's three teams in the hunt for top spots. So you've Cork needing a win or draw to finish top. Defeat will see them finish third unless Donegal fail to beat Clare. For Tyrone, a victory combined with a Clare win or draw in Castlebar or draw in Castlebar will deliver top spot. They could still come top if their winning margin over Cork is the same as Donegal's over Clare. For Donegal, a win or draw against Clare to ensure progression, they can top the group if Tyrone win in Tullamore by a margin 3 points narrower than their win over Clare. A defeat against Clare combined with Tyrone avoiding defeat against Cork will eliminate Donegal. And for Clare, then a win over Donegal combined with the Tyrone result against Cork to advance. And should Tyrone lose to Cork, Clare will likely need to overhaul a large score difference to survive. And to overtake Donegal on a score difference would require an 11-point victory. So there's a lot at play there. Cork, Tyrone, Donegal, Clare. Who's going to win this?
Murray, I'm glad you wrapped that up because I was just about to give you all that information.
I had a feeling.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Fair play. I'm going to have to give you half this big fee tonight. Do you know something, Murray? I'm just looking at it. This is probably the most interesting scenario because most other ones look like a top. Someone's going to top or a top two scenario, particularly with obviously with Kerry in Dublin. Then you have maybe an Armagh Galway. This one is the most interesting. Fair play to Cork, Murray. And I'm on about, as I mentioned with Mickey Hart, how you time the season. Cork lost their first three games and they've only lost once since then, you know, league and championship, and that was down away to Kerry, which you weren't expected to win. Really, you'd have to say fair play to John Cleary. And they had a training camp actually after that third game, so I don't know if this was all planned, but if it was, what a great plan it was. be stable, stabilise yourself in Division 2, and that's hit the championship. And certainly that game where they beat Donegal has made a lot of people sit up and take notice. And even though Tyrone, I think, are kind of fancied, I don't know why going into this game, because you would certainly think on a neutral venue, the way Cork beat Donegal, because Tyrone are so up and down, you don't know what you're going to get with them. They have huge potential still, but just game to game, or even half to half, like that game against Donegal, played well in the first half, probably one of their better performances, second half probably one of their worst. So we've no idea what we're going to get with Tyrone, but with Cork, you know, I'd just say they now have got, I'd say, huge momentum from that victory. You know, they're a team that have been up and around it, you know, looking to take that next step. And I think winning that Donegal match will give them huge, you know, I suppose that bit of experience going into it. For Tyrone, you know, Morgan really took the game to Clare the last day. Again, very poor first half. Clare missed the load. You know, it's down to Hamsey, McKernan, you know, Dara Canavan, Donnelly. They run this team, but they need other players to step up around it. So I just think I'll give Cork the slight advantage in this one. And Donegal Clare then, you know, I'd have to say, and I've said it many times, respect to Clare this season, you know, losing 10 players from last year, still competing with Kerry. You know, they had a late chance. You know, Kelly tipped one over the bar, the Cork keeper. They would equalise against Cork. They played well against Tyrone first half, missed a hatful. So they're not to be taken lightly. And I think Jim McGuinness, the reset now with Donegal will be very interesting. I know there's talk of, obviously, Big McGee, who's been one of their players of the season, picked up a bad injury, I think, against Cork. Doesn't look like he's going to make it. But the Donegal mindset now, after the huge energies expended going through Ulster, beating three top teams and then beating Tyrone, they certainly weren't on it. They were stripped a lot against Cork. You know, Cork really overturned the ball against them. So is that reset and that focus back? That's an interesting one. As you say, Marie, Cork will want to, or Donegal want to beat Clare by a sizeable amount. Their score difference isn't bad already. If they beat Clare, I think, by 7 or 8 points, and Tyrone beat Cork, I think that'll be the difference. Otherwise, if Cork do their thing and beat Tyrone, they'll top the group and Donegal come second.
Okay, let's move on to the final group then. Kerry Louth, Monaghan, Meath. Kerry win or draw to top the group. Defeat will drop them to second. Louth are guaranteed knockout place. Win to top the group. Draw to finish second. A Monaghan win or draw to advance the knockouts. And Meath only a win will preserve their interest in the championship. So Kerry Louth, Monaghan, Meath.
Yeah, listen, I suppose Louth, Kerry, interest me, Marie. Look at last year. And again, going back to managing players and the job that Jerry Brennan's done there. You know, unlucky in the league, almost got relegated. They just finished a point above the relegation zone, and they've come into the championship and they've been the best, second best team in Leinster. They've given Dublin a game. They should have beaten Monaghan in the last day, and you'd have to say fair play to the backroom team and this Louth side. They've really taken control of things. I mean, they were beat by 30 points by Kerry last year. You know, there's not a chance of them being beaten by anything like that this time. And in fact, Marie, if they're able to keep the goals out, and Kerry aren't scoring goals, and they'll be defensively set up, they will play the game quite negative. A bit like you see us Ulster boys playing a lot. Jerry Brennan's smart enough to know that as this team grows. I think if they keep the goals out and could get a couple, this match could be very close. Now, if they don't do that, you would think Kerry by 6 or 7 points. But certainly, Marie, in a year later after conceding 30, that certainly won't happen. And the other game, I think Monaghan and Meath, you know, just this Meath side, you know, you've seen their ex-player Cian Ward come out and called, you know, where Meath at, more or less for what it is in terms of where the glory of where Meath should be. He called it BS, and he said, you know, this team doesn't have any fight, they don't have any style. That would be a real worry for Meath. If they want to be likes of, say, a Cork or someone who's going to step up to the next level, I think there's massive work to be done there. I think it's going to take quite a few years. Maybe someone coming in and really setting a new game plan and play, much like Jerry Brennan has done with Louth. Even when we took it on for some work that was done between Hart and Devon, he's really put his own stamp on it. And I just think that, you know, Louth are coming, they'll be second place in this group. I've no doubt about that. And Monaghan will finish it strong. I think they'll have too much for Meath. They're getting most of their players back. Began, of course, has come back as well. And I just think, again, too many scoring forwards for Meath. And I think Monaghan aids that out and they'll come out with the difference. I think the scoring difference will see Louth through as second place.
Brendan, thank you for wrapping all of that up for us, Alan.
Excellent, no Brendan. Problem. Excellent.
Right, we'll talk to you next week. Thanks so much. We're going to take a very quick break, but stay with us. Shane McGrath is standing by to talk hurling.
RTE 2FM. Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. It's time to look ahead to this weekend's hurling action. Shane McGrath joins us this evening, as he does every Friday. How are you, Shane?
Good, Marie. How's things?
Good. Thank you so much for joining me. I think we're in Euros mode, but we'll take a little bit of a break now to look ahead to the hurling. Not as exciting as maybe last weekend, which ended up not being exciting at all, Shane. But anyway, from the Clare perspective, anyway. But still, we do have two games this weekend. We have the All-Ireland Hurling Preliminary Quarterfinals, Offaly and Cork and Laois and Wexford. Offaly and Cork, let's start with that one, just because, look, it's everybody wants to see Cork and how they're shaping up. And you would have to think that Offaly will be feeling quite good about themselves after winning the Joe McDonagh final last weekend. What do you think the contest will be like, though?
Well, first of all, Marie, if I get it as wrong as I did last week, where I thought Dublin were going to win.
Shane, you're an honest man, and I'm glad you've started right there, because the first thing I was coming to, Dublin were absolutely shocking last week, Shane.
Come here, Alan. There was three kids trying to break into the room there last week, my three kids, and I'd say they would have made a better call. But look, what do you do? So if I get this one wrong this week, I just don't think you'll call me anymore on Friday.
Yeah,
I just think you're going to have to get... But look, I think, Marie... Even I was actually in Port Laois 5 years ago when Laois bet Dublin, and I think the learning for teams have been since then is that you just cannot take Joe McDonagh teams for granted. That the standard is good, the competition is good, and they're coming in off the back of really close competitive games. So if you look at the Cork team, Marie, and you look at the Wexford team, they are both gone as strong as they possibly can. Mm. There's no one being held back, there's no chances being taken, and they're both going to go at this. For me, I think I do, like Offaly and Laois, obviously getting to the Joe Mac final is brilliant, and for Offaly and the couple of weeks they've had, I just don't know, is this more of a punishment than a promotion of the games in Offaly and Laois? And what I mean by that is, like asking the likes of Offaly under-20s lads who have played in two All-Ireland finals over the last 2 weekends, even asking them to go and tog out and play a match this weekend is hard. And the Laois lads as well, mentally they're so down after a defeat. You know yourselves, lads, after a defeat in a final that you're geared up for, it takes a long time. It might take a few months to get back up again, but you know they're getting another crack at it this week. So I just don't know, is there a need for these matches? That's what I'm trying to say. And some people might totally disagree and say, no, the Joe Mac finalists, they deserve this and they deserve their crack at this. But the Joe Mac winners are going to play Liam McCarthy next year and they're going to be ready to play it. Whereas I think, you know, like, let's be honest, we cannot see anything except Cork and Wexford winning these matches the weekend. I really can't.
That's true. Yeah.
And like, I just don't know what are Offaly and Laois going to get out of it. Like, the Offaly lads are, like, you know, they've been enjoying their week, and rightly so. And, you know, a lot of them, I'd say, would prefer to be on holidays, like, be totally honest, you know, rather than and getting ready for their club championships then. But going out and asking them to play again, I you know, it is hard going on them. But like, Cork and Wexford, they have a job to do. And to be honest, Marie, they've picked their strongest possible groups to go and get the job done. And I tell you, lads, if Cork and Wexford don't win these games, I'm just giving up hurling punditry. I'm going to get into. I don't know, maybe.
Well, Alan does the hurling now, so you can do the soccer.
You can do the League of Ireland and I do the hurling, Shane.
Yeah, that's fine, yeah. So look, yeah, but that's my view on it, Marie, anyway, you know. I just don't know what can be got out of it for Offaly and Laois, you know. I can't see anything but Wexford and Cork victories here, like.
But Shane, on that, can Cork get plenty out of it? Because obviously after the last day out, they were really good. They've been impressive so far. You mentioned them in the strong team, so are they trying to build momentum to push on and push forward?
Well, I put it like this, Alan. Tip were in this bowl last year, Alan, right? And they were after actually losing their last game, whereas Cork are coming in with savage momentum after their last few performances, you know, beating Limerick, you know, destroying Tip. And Tip absolutely annihilated Offaly. And to be honest, Alan, they learned absolutely nothing out of it. All they got over was a couple of injuries, actually. I remember Craig Morgan even twinged his hamstring and had to go off. And they learned nothing out of it. People that were down at it said the match was done after 10, 15 minutes. So Cork have a job to do. And I think they'll go full professional with them, no more so than Wexford will. And like, Offaly and Laois will obviously be going out to do their solid best as well. I'm just saying the cards are stacked against them, Alan. Mm-hmm. I don't know what either team is going to learn too much out of it. Cork in particular, because I just think they are... They're the threat now, maybe. They might be the threat to Limerick, because they're coming in, they're getting a second lifeline. We've seen what they're about, we've seen what they can do, and they're back to full strength. So what'll they learn out of it? I don't think they'll learn too much, to be honest, Alan.
OK, Okay, well, we'll talk to you next week, and we'll take you to task if your predictions don't come through again.
Look, Les, if I'm wrong in this, you're just going to have to get Carly to do the hurling.
If you're wrong in this, we won't be ringing you again, Shane. Put it that way.
Right, Shane, thanks a million.
Okay, lads.
Talk to you soon. Enjoy the weekend. It's time now to turn our attention to the URC 2 semi-finals this weekend, the Bulls in Leinster, Munster and Glasgow. And to talk us through how they could potentially go, Bernard Jackman is with us on the line. How are you, Bernard? Let's start with the Bulls and Leinster, because I'm so interested in altitude and how Leinster are going to do.
Yeah, I think it's a game Leinster will win, have to win. Altitude is definitely an advantage, but the quality that Leinster are bringing, they think it may be over 1,000 caps in the starting team, I think over 500 caps on the bench. It's the most experienced team that's ever gone to Loftus. Of any club side, so it's a huge ask for the Bulls. And I think, as I said, altitude would be a factor. Jake White begged fans to come next week and make it a fortress, but I think at the moment they're looking at a crowd of about 20,000. So, and it's a big stadium, so it's not going to be as hostile as maybe Jake White would have hoped it would be. And you just look at that Leinster team, and you look at even their form in the loss against Toulouse. Should be more than good enough to get over Bullside, who have got a home advantage, but have looked a little bit vulnerable in the last four or five games. You know, conceded a lot of points against the Glasgow at altitude. Probably should have lost last weekend to Benetton at altitude. And it's a game that if Leinster lose, there'll be serious questions asked.
What are the concerns from a Leinster perspective, though, heading over there?
Yeah, look, I think the Bulls have a very good tactical kicking game, and they weren't really bad against Ulster, but it was certainly an area that Ulster will feel that they dominated. So that's an area that will concern them a little bit. But I think the pluses are bigger than that. I mean, Gary Ringrose is coming back in for his first start, being able to have Frawley and Osborne on the bench, you know, to bring on, gives them real strength and depth. And obviously, I think Ringrose has a big role to play in getting Leinster's attack moving a little bit better than it did in the final against Toulouse, because the Bulls do use a rush defence, a very aggressive defence, and Leinster got stuck a little bit in the 15s against Toulouse. But I think Ringrose's passing ability will be able to help them get around that and lock that and get down the edges. So for me, he's the big call. He's been out for quite a while, but he's always been able to come back from injury and hit his traps quite quickly. So Leinster certainly hoping he does it tomorrow night.
Are you confident enough, Leinster victory?
Yeah, and I think this is much the more clear cut of the semi-finals, to be fair.
Okay, so Munster, Glasgow, then bit of history between the two sides here as well. Munster have been shown really good form heading into this. Do you think they'll be able to continue on their run?
Yeah, I think they will win, but they've become really good at managing tight games and winning them, and that's a great trait to have, particularly knockout rugby, but. You'd also like to do things a little bit easier. I think Graham Mountjoy certainly will, and Glasgow are a dangerous side. Now they were good against the Stormers in the quarterfinal, but their form has tailed off a little bit to where they were in December, January. But they are probably the most, articulate attack, if that's a word. They're probably the most structured attacking shape, and actually it's an Irishman at the heart of it. It's Nigel Carlin, the former Connacht coach, has created a very dangerous attacking side. They scored the most maul tries in the competition, so Munster will be very conscious of giving them any penalties in their own half, because they will put it 5 yards out, and it'll be a big battle to keep them out. I think from a Munster point of view, Calvin Nash is out, but Mike Haley coming back from injury, which he played last week off the bench, means that he can start a fullback, and Zeebo will play on the left wing. And Nankivell is back in the centre, which is a big boost for Munster. And just to try and, I suppose, get a little bit more of RG Snyman, they've decided to play Snyman off the bench this week. And Witcherly comes in the second row to partner Tyke Byrne. So that'll be interesting. Roundtree, over the last 7 or 8 weeks since the tour to South Africa, has spoken about how they've kind of found a way to get the best out of their bench, and Snyman started the last few games, but he's going to start on tomorrow evening off the bench, and that was a role he played very well for Munster en route to winning the URC last year, coming off the bench, making a big impact, and he could be a key part of them winning tomorrow night.
So a Munster and Leinster final?
Yeah, I think so. I think the Munster-Glasgow game would be tighter than Leinster-Bulls, but it'll be set up for a brilliant final, Leinster Munster and Tom Park next week.
Okay, Bernard, thank you so much. Loads to look forward to. Actually, so much on this weekend. It's crazy when you start to think about it and throw the Euros into the mix and three games a day. Kind of hope it's raining because then you have an excuse to sit in and watch everything that's going on. And just on those rugby as well, that URC semi-final between the Bulls and Leinster is on Saturday from 2:30 on RT1 and the player, and then the URC semi-final Munster and Glasgow on Saturday from 6 on the RTÉ News app, and commentary on Saturday Sport. It'll be commentary on both games on Saturday Sport, so do tune into that. Let's go back now though to North Carolina, to the US Open, and check in once again with Gary Moore. And Gary.
Yeah, hi Marie. I can't. It's such a lot has happened in terms of the RTE's various outlets. It's hard to actually get a grip on what's happened in the last few in the last 25 minutes or so since I was talking to you last, or half an hour. But anyway, what I can say for sure is that Shane Lowry and Rory McIlroy have finished the rounds. Lowry bogeyed his final hole. He started with 13 pars, God. Then a birdie, then two bogeys in his last few holes, and on 5 over par. Going to miss the cut, I think. And so amazingly, for most people anyway, Scottie Scheffler, such a dominant player in the last while, but a 4-over par round for him, 5 over. So he's the same as Larry. I think they're heading home. The 4 overs might make it. And we'll get up to the leaders now in a sec. But the other two Irish players early in their rounds, well, they both are 4 over. Tom McKibben, level for the day after 5. Seamus Power, 3 over for the day. Bogeyed his first 3 holes. They're both 4 over. So they are borderline cut-wise. To the top of the leaderboard, Thomas Dietrich. He is 5 under par, 4 under for the day. He's having the best round of the day so far. By no means got a history of winning tournaments, but a very good player who was a contender for Luke Donald's Ryder Cup team in Rome, and just got edged out. Possibly by Ludwig Auber, was one of the guys who edged him out, who had never even played in a major at all at that stage. But he's a contender here as well, because it's Dietrich on 5 under with 2 to play. Patrick Cantlay, 5 under. He's just played 1 hole. Bryson DeChambeau, clubhouse leader, on 4 under. And Ludwig Auber, he's just started part of the afternoon wave. He's also 4 under. He's played just 1 hole as well. Then you've got Rory McIlroy on 3 under. And Matthew Pavon, who hasn't even started yet. He's just on his opening hole, right on the opening tee for him right now, the 10th tee. He's 3 under. So, you know, there's not that many ahead of McIlroy. Dietrich and Cantlay, 5 under, with Cantlay not finished. DeChambeau and Auber, 4 under, with Auber only starting, and McIlroy 3 under with Pavon, who's only starting, and no more on 3 under. Hideki Matsuyama is the only man in the clubhouse on 2 under par. So not playing easy here, as it wasn't expected to be. It is really hot out there. It is calm, but those greens are drying out and it's going to be difficult. There's going to be certainly McIlroy at least in contention come the weekend.
Something to look forward to for sure. Gary, as always, thank you so much for joining us, and no doubt we'll be talking to you again over the next few days. Alan Cawley, you're literally warming up here in studio.
I am, yeah. I'm itching to get going, Marie. I really am. I'm so looking forward to the game, kickoff of the Euros, and we're all Scots for the night.
Absolutely. Well, that's it for us this evening. We'll be back next week talking all things Euros and also reflecting on the rest of the sports. So do tune in. Thanks to BCO Max and to Barry O'Neill, the producer. The official chart show's up next.
RTE 2FM.